Hello and welcome back to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast now in our 19th year. As always, I am your host, Jess Marquez, and our guests today are Kit Zabala and Seth Young, founding partners of GMA Consulting, to talk about all things related to tribal economic diversification as tribes look to build off of the foundation laid by land-based gaming and venture into new business opportunities.
This podcast is sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the premier affiliate marketing site that delivers quality players to your online casino, sportsbook, or poker room with transparency and integrity.
Land-based gaming has long been an economic driver for tribes across the U.S., but in order to ensure long-term sustainability and growth, diversification into new avenues and investments is paramount. This applies to both gaming and non-gaming verticals, according to Kit Zabala and Seth Young, two of the founding partners of GMA Consulting. The dynamic duo spoke with me via Zoom in February. Kit, Seth, thank you guys so much for joining me today. The focus of today, obviously, is going to be all things tribal, specifically tribal diversity. Now, I always say that, you know, I was born and bred in the land-based industry, commercial industry, growing up in Reno. Ever since I started in this role, the learning more about the tribal side of things has just been really fascinating because obviously it has just been a meteoric rise for that side of the industry. And I just think it's really fascinating, especially now that it begins to diversify. But first off, starting off, how are you two gentlemen doing today? Again, thank you for joining me.
Doing great. Thanks so much for, you know, the opportunity to chat on this subject today. Also looking forward to it. Just having, you know, working with tribes over the course of the last decade in our company, having done it for the last two decades, it's something that we've seen mature and grow in terms of the, you know, diverse investments that tribes have been making and how that sort of shifted and changed over the years. So look forward to chatting.
Yeah, what Kit said, doing great.
Definitely. So I want to kind of start broad, and then we'll go specific into certain details. So I guess just to really start it off with a kind of overview, what in your guys' minds is kind of the current trends and initiatives as it relates to tribal diversification, specifically across, you know, gaming and hospitality?
Sure. So I think, you know, it's something that's not necessarily unique to tribal gaming entities and tribes. It's something that we've seen over the broader aspect of the industry is that, you know, over the course of time with gaming market expansion, different casino entities, land-based focused entities have had to figure out how to make themselves differentiated in the evolving marketplace. So, you know, that includes making sure that they refine their casino products to make it as attractive as possible to a diverse as group as possible. So, you know, that's sort of the evolution, especially with tribes, from class two bingo machines to class three machines, which used to be a lot bigger of a difference than it is today. And eventually included things like improving the food and beverage offering to have, you know, diverse set of quick serve options, full service dining, fine dining to casual, as well as figuring out, you know, what sort of hotel amenities are provided. And now we're getting into that phase of time where, you know, we're looking beyond the traditional casino and hospitality components of a program and saying, hey, do we also want to be a major player in the entertainment, traditional entertainment space with concert venues, hosting major comedic acts, which has always been a part of the story. But now, you know, several tribes are thinking about making some marquee investments and building great venues for that. Outside of the core casino product, you've also got tribes thinking about how they can diversify beyond the footprint that, you know, they have in terms of geography, and looking towards other markets where they can, you know, dip their toes in and figure out, you know, if there's an opportunity from a gaming or hospitality perspective. And I know Seth can add to a few other ways they've been to figuring out how to diversify from a gaming perspective.
Yeah, well said, Kit. I think just to dovetail that, you know, you're seeing tribes really start to consider the online gaming opportunity in a more serious way. And, you know, when tribes are making generational decisions, it's a bit different than the quarter by quarter approach that a lot of the publicly traded companies have to take because of the nuance of the market. And I think that's fascinating because it helps inform different kinds of potential market structures that might govern the overarching regulation of online casino, online sports betting. But it is important that any tribe does understand online gaming as best as they can. When gaming is the lifeblood of infrastructure, education, support services, government in many places. So I think it's fascinating to see how different tribes may treat the opportunity. Do they want to be a B2C operator? Do they want to be an investor? Do they want to own B2B tools? Are they going to sublicense their operations or run it themselves? Do they view sports betting as an amenity or a revenue driver? Interesting and topical, you know, from today or yesterday, the Chicken Ranch in California launched a class two sports product through a business called Vetnos, which is a fascinating new innovation. So I think, you know, so many things can happen, but the upshot here is the tribes that are not considering what online gaming will look like for them may have an issue in the future when all the commercial gaming interests continue to push and push and push. We've seen Michigan come up with an interesting market structure to blend tribal and commercial. Same with Arizona. I think it's a matter of when, not if. So it is quite important to consider these initiatives as part of your growth plans.
Definitely. And you guys obviously touched on a lot of different things there. We'll kind of go into more specific details about a lot of them. Before we do, though, I mean, is there any sort of other sectors or areas that, you know, we should be aware of at this time, or I should say tribes should be aware of at this time?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, tribes have always looked for different sources of funds that can provide for those key infrastructure pieces like healthcare and education and other items that Seth is talking about. Because at the end of the day, these tribes are communities and looking for ways to continue to fund, you know, these communities as their forever entities, right? They need to be able to provide for generations to come. And so looking outside of gaming, there's definitely been a bit of a trend towards just looking at like what those adjacent industries may be that they have some degree of familiarity with, just in terms of things that maybe that they've invested in the past. So an example of that would be like fuel centers, where a fuel and convenience store on a tribal casino property may be something that they've gotten invested in and become familiar with. We're also seeing tribes start to pursue acquisition and ownership of those and management of those opportunities outside of their core market area. Specifically, also looking at, you know, It's sort of those industries that provide passive levels of income that are a bit more risk averse, similar to what like a family office, major high net worth individuals pursue. Something that's going to provide consistent cash flows, provide an opportunity for them to leverage and potentially have, you know, an M&A opportunity, and also provide an exit strategy down the road. Something that they can, you know, improve upon, bundle up and sell. A couple other examples of that, I mean, oil and gas, energy, agriculture, storage, none of these things are the most attractive from an outsider's point of view, but that's typically what a family office or a tribe should be investing in, just because they are the things that are going to be able to take care of the community in the long term. We really like to think about, and I know many folks that focus on this for a living, treating it like a family office does, just making sure that you curate the investments for the wants and needs of the tribe. You find a good balance between wealth creation and financial needs. Sustainability is paramount. So you got to make sure that you provide for future generations. So all of those things that are adjacencies, they have great, easy opportunity to have expertise in it already. They can lend on people that they know that have further expertise in it and provide more opportunities beyond gaming.
So speaking of gaming, I want to kind of move to that side of things relatively quickly. I know it's kind of a small piece of this. I mean, we're talking about diversification beyond gaming, obviously, but one of the big things that tribes face, obviously the biggest challenge, is that they've been heavily dependent on the traditional land-based gaming side of things. And kind of in this day and age, or, you know, you guys mentioned stuff at the top, but could you kind of go into more details of like how specifically they're trying to address these challenges in 2024 and beyond?
Yeah, so I definitely tribes have been constrained, right, in terms of the economic opportunities that are associated with gaming. One way that they've broken out of that is looking through that core strategy of geographic diversification. So you see that with a Mohegan and their Inspire project in South Korea. You see it with the off-strip casino management project that they're doing with Virgin in Las Vegas. Porch Creek's pretty active with it as well, with their recent acquisition and management of Wind Creek Bethlehem in Pennsylvania, Magic City in South Florida. The new South Chicago gaming license that they were awarded in Illinois. Chickasaw Nation has a global gaming solutions enterprise that's focused on pursuing new development and management opportunities, which they've pursued licenses in Nebraska. I know that there's been articles about them pursuing licenses for a downstate New York casino opportunity at Coney Island. And then you've got tribes like San Manuel, who obviously made headlines when they acquired and began to operate Palms. So I think they're all great examples of figuring out how to do, you know, the bread and butter of what their core business has been in terms of enterprises and thinking about how they can make money at it outside of, you know, sort of their traditional home.
Just to dovetail that, I think it's important to note that not all tribes are created equally. Different tribes have different kinds of capital that they can play with. And that really does inform a tailored growth plan for each tribe and out-of-the-box thinking in some cases. If you're a very small tribe in rural Michigan, you may be very different than the San Manuels of the world that can afford things that you can't. But I've seen things like debt collection firms or payment services, you know, things online that can scale and are just agnostic to gaming. But in gaming, you know, you saw a group like Pala come out and invest in and create a powerhouse platform, which ended up selling to Boyd Gaming for a pretty penny, showing a return for them, frankly. So I think it really just comes down to how philosophically interested a tribe is in diversification, and then the information that they're getting. If they're getting bet intel, it's garbage in, garbage out. You're going to make poor decisions. For me, this whole conversation just highlights the importance of working with or speaking with people that really deeply understand both the importance of gaming to a tribe and the advice that they may be giving related to diversification. There's a lot of bad advice out there, which is frustrating sometimes.
Definitely. And I think, you know, what you guys just said kind of highlights an overall question for me is like, I feel like in some ways this is really interesting test case or like economic case where you have these tribes who are all independent, you know, they're all sovereign tribes. And like you said, they all have different circumstances and different needs and wants. Do you think that freedom of movement is like a little bit of a burden, or it's like a good thing? It's like a fresh start, like a blank slate type of thing. Do you think it's, what would you say? Like, is it more or the other, or do you think it just depends on the tribe?
I think the answer is yes. It's both. Frankly, it's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in the sense that you have the freedom and ability to adapt in a market that is ever changing. The only constant in the gaming space and entertainment and hospitality is that it changes all the time. And it's a burden in the sense that since you have that kind of freedom and flexibility, everybody and their mother has their hand in your pocket trying to find a way to make money off of your opportunities. And that's the hard part. So, you know, when I think about tying it back to us, frankly, when I think about GMA as a consulting firm, I think the one thing that makes us so interesting is that we all come from being operators, and we come from a place of understanding of what it is to be in that business. And it makes us a little bit more objective, I think, than maybe some others. And love talking to tribes as often as I can and educating so they can make those generational decisions. But yeah, it's a really fascinating subject, that one. I think you can give a good answer in either direction.
Yeah, and I definitely, just to add that, and sorry to cut you off, I know that tribes are very keen to, in many times, offer up advice and help show, you know, what they've been successful in for, you know, folks that they're not necessarily competing directly with, right? So we do a lot of work just kind of like partnering folks up to have conversations and say, hey, you know, I'm a tribe in California that started a distillery and brewery. I've learned this and that from, you know, that process of diversifying our investments, and, you know, offer that up to a tribe that might be considering in Oregon. I know that that's also true with, you know, certain tribes that are pursuing more like real estate focused investments, you know, making sure that we can help, you know, make those connections and form those relationships with other tribes that they might not have thought to communicate with, and figure out what's worked and not worked. Because at the end of the day, I know that everybody wants everybody to succeed, and they're willing to help with that.
Definitely, certainly. And what I was going to say is, it is fascinating to see kind of the you know, I think the example as a California resident, the first example that comes to my mind is obviously the sports betting saga that's been going on here. And you just see the difference in communities, but also the way that they can band together when needed is just really, it's fascinating to me, especially as somebody who hasn't been in this industry for too long. So anyway, I want to move to a little bit more of a deep dive on the technological side of things. I mean, and you have talked about, we've cited some examples, but that is really interesting to me. Again, not to belabor the point, but as somebody who hasn't been around really to see this evolution, I mean, you guys have been in the industry a long time, and now that you see tribes really kind of taking that next step on into the tech side of things, I mean, what has that development been like? What has that journey been like? And kind of, is it, you know, what does that mean for the future, obviously, for a lot of these tribes that are making real forays into these, you know, technological sides of things that they just never were before?
I think it depends on the kind of tech that we're talking about. If we're talking about online gaming, that's one subject. If we're talking about, you know, concierge software or tools to use in, for a retail operation, that's another subject. But I'll speak to the first one. I think the hardest part that I've seen over the last really 20 years has been discerning what is a trend and what is a fad. Those things are quite different, right? So, you know, back to the point where if you don't know something intimately because you haven't done it before, you only are as good as the advice that you're getting. And I've seen colossal failures across many tribes that have tried to lean into the online gaming opportunity in some way, right? Falling victim to sales or a really good story. And then I've seen, you know, flip side, tribes that have done a tremendous job in realizing the opportunity. If you look at Mohegan Sun, for example, they got in very early in New Jersey and worked with resorts on the online side and started driving just net EBITDA to their property. Foxwoods, when I was over there, we built Foxwoods Online, which was one of the largest casino products in the United States. I think maybe the largest for a tribe at the time. So that was great. You've seen some tribes make good deals in the online gaming and sports betting market. You've seen some tribes make bad deals. So what's really been fascinating to me is a tribe like Pechanga. They forever have been having conversations, inviting people to come in and say, tell us what you're doing. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily leaning into all of it, but it does mean that they're informed. And I do think that is so, so, so important. They also have great people working with them. Same goes for San Manuel. So education, really education has been the most important thing, absent, you know, enabling legislation.
Definitely. And, you know, one thing that I kind of want to move on now to is we talked obviously again at the top, but kind of diversification into big commercial markets and even beyond. Obviously, you guys mentioned the Inspire Resort, which I've been really interested to see that development. But as tribes obviously gain more of a foothold in the Las Vegas scene, what is your guys' kind of assessment of how that's gone so far? I mean, obviously, it depends on the tribe. I know it's different projects, but do you think that that is a trend that will continue? And do you think that that could potentially have a big impact, obviously, on the longstanding commercial way of doing things in Vegas and in other areas around the world?
I do think it's a trend that we're going to continue to see. And I don't think it's isolated to Las Vegas. At the end of the day, you know, tribes that have proven themselves to be fantastic gaming operators are looking for additional opportunities. Las Vegas being the mecca of gaming and, you know, on Earth, obviously is a great place to have a marquee property. Additionally, a lot of the markets that some of these tribes serve, whether it be the greater LA metro area or, you know, New York and surrounding Northeast areas with like a Mohegan and their involvement with Virgin, they've got a great understanding of different you know, consumers across the US that are going to Vegas today. So I think they bring some like unique perspective in terms of and databases of how they can capitalize on that. At the same time, Vegas is definitely its own beast. As we all know, it's unique and highly competitive, which will make it difficult for any operator to, you know, perform at a high level. But I think that at the end of the day, the major players in tribal gaming are certainly going to find, you know, the right parts and pieces for them to compete in that market as well as every other commercial market that they can.
one of the more interesting things about, for example, Sam Manuel owning the Palms is, you know, regardless of, and this goes for anybody, regardless of how a property may or may not do, you now have a place for your players to go, and you can have a loyalty program that transcends properties. So to the extent that you have very loyal customers, it may be very well worth it to you to have those players at your Las Vegas property, even if the property, and I'm not suggesting the Palms performs one way or the other. I have no idea how it's performing, to be honest. But what I am saying is that if your players are parked at a property in Vegas and they can bring that play back to a property in California, that may be well worth it to you, despite what happens, you know, with the rest of the property.
Are there, I mean, I know it's kind of difficult, you know, we live in a really weird time where there aren't many there's not many last frontiers left in terms of markets in the US that are untapped with gaming as of yet, given the, you know, the meteoric expansion. But are there any other kind of markets and or areas that you guys can see maybe Tribes targeting specifically in the future, or maybe, you know, gaining more of a foothold? I mean, we just talked Vegas, but I'm talking like, you know, other potential markets that may come online. Is there any places that come to your guys' mind?
Pretty much you name any major market, and I can assure you that a Tribe, without knowing for a fact, is going to be pursuing it, just as every commercial operator is going to pursue the major markets. That's, you know, that's where some of these tribal gaming corporations are at in terms of their size and pedigree. And, you know, they're willing to go to bat against, you know, the big commercial operators, as they should be.
But I think this one's interesting too. We see a group like Mohegan Sun diversifying outside of the United States, and there are emerging geographies around the world that could be fascinating, depending on how a Tribe is looking at it. If it's purely financial and it doesn't necessarily help in the United States, that you know, maybe good for one Tribe, but not great for another. And I think there's some really interesting emerging markets globally.
Certainly, certainly. Well, this has been a absolutely jam-packed episode full of a lot of good information. You guys are definitely at the top of your craft, and I don't take this lightly. But in terms of future outlook, is there anything else, you know, kind of parting thoughts, maybe future predictions and or takeaways that you guys have, just to kind of sum everything up, and in terms of diversification moving forward?
Yeah, I think that, you know, coming out of this recent pandemic period, it really kind of shed light on the overall economic health of different tribal communities and how reliant they are on gaming. And gaming being more focused on like the land-based gaming that they have in their communities. And it's provided an opportunity for everybody to look sort of at what they're doing and see what they can do to change, either from a gaming or non-gaming perspective, to be less reliant on that core gaming offering that they have today, and figure out how they can be more reliant on, whether it be gaming in other geographic areas, whether it be other lines of business within, you know, on the home front, or whether it be other lines of business outside of their backyard and general comfort zone. So I think it's a great opportunity for Tribes to get it right now and not be so reliant on gaming in the future. And I mean, the world's sort of their oyster.
Bring it back to gaming. For me, I'm going to say something that might be controversial. I think the biggest threat and the biggest opportunity for Tribes in the same sentence is online gaming. If they get it wrong, it could have generational impact. If they get it right, it could have generational impact. Either way, it's going to have generational impact. So I'd suggest that being well-educated about that is maybe the most important thing that a Tribe can do today.
Certainly. And, you know, I think that also goes, again, the convergence with the commercial industry. I think that goes for a lot of commercial operators as well. As I always like to say, all roads lead to iGaming. So I think that's right in line. I know both you gentlemen have extremely busy schedules. I'll let you get on with your day. And I thank you again so much for joining me today, and talk soon in the future.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast sponsored by iGaming Player, the premier affiliate marketing site that delivers quality players to your online casino, sportsbook, or poker room with transparency and integrity. To learn more about the topics we just discussed, visit ggbmagazine.com. Subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning. Sign up at ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.